This is 15 Minute History, a podcast for educators, students, and history buffs featuring the minds and talents of the University of Texas at Austin. 15 Minute History is a partnership of Not Even Past and Hemispheres in the College of Liberal Arts at UT Austin.
Hi, I'm Joan Neuberger, your host for today's episode of 15 Minute History. Today we're going to be talking about cats and dogs in history, specifically paintings of cats and dogs, in a new exhibit at the Blanton Museum of Art at the University of Texas at Austin. Our guest today is Francesca Consagra, who's the Blanton Senior Curator of Prints, Drawings, and European Paintings, and she is the curator of this show. Welcome, Francesca.
Thank you so much, Joan.
Well, let's start with a kind of description of what the exhibit is, what's in it, what its purpose is.
Well, the exhibition has 155 works of art that cover 33 centuries of our relationships with...
That's historical.
Yes, that is. Our relationships with these two species, cats and dogs. It's primarily focused on Western Europe and the United States, but we also have objects from China and from Mexico. From the 3rd century. So we do have a wide range of objects, but it's predominantly European. And the majority predate 1900. And that's because the Blanton's own collection has a strength in that area. So what we called Old Master prints and drawings and some wonderful Old Master paintings in our own collection, that was the basis for the show. So the thematic sections that were set up were based on the Blanton's own collection. And just to have a little plug here, we have the best prints and drawings collection of Old Masters in the Southwest. So it's what we base the exhibition on. And then I went out and I borrowed from wonderful institutions across the state of Texas, in Houston and in San Antonio and in Dallas, Fort Worth. And I also borrowed from Yale Center for British Art.
What's the purpose of the show? How do you see the overall purpose?
Well, I hope that this doesn't sound arrogant, but I feel that it's the curator's job to make art accessible and to share the joy of looking and thinking with as many people as possible. I do find that going to art museums and learning how to look is nourishes the soul and the intellect. So having a popular subject like this, cats and dogs, is a way of bringing people to the museum who might otherwise never come, and in the hopes that they will be moved and inspired to learn more.
Studying these objects can also teach us a lot about the past. So, for example, what can we learn, let's say, about religion in the past by looking at paintings that include cats and or dogs?
So this is really interesting. When you come to the exhibition in the first room, you're going to be introduced to a wonderful group of objects from ancient Egypt. And one of them shows the goddess Bastet. She has a cat head and a woman's body, which comes from the late period, and that's around 7th century BCE. And it's bronze with gold inlay, and she has golden eyes. And this is from the San Antonio Museum of Art. And it references an entire culture that revered the cat to the point where, through observation of the cat, they noticed that they were good mothers, they took care of their litters, and they had a lot of litters. And so if you were a young Egyptian woman, and you wanted to be a good mother and you wanted to have lots of children, you would have a figure of Bastet nearby to worship or evoke these wonderful attributes within you. And there were huge temples devoted to Bastet, and near them were cemeteries for cats. And we also have in the exhibition a small coffin, a bronze coffin that had cat skeleton in it, a mummy, a cat mummy. And sometimes they would even bury their cat mummies with mummified mice and little cups of milk so that their beloved cats would have a good afterlife with lots of mice to eat and milk to drink. So you come from that period to, let's say, you know, medieval Christian period in Western Europe, and you have a completely different response to the cat. And it was probably inspired by this very popular cult of Bastet in ancient Egypt, because if the cat was so revered in a pagan religion, then it might not be looked upon as so wonderful in a Christian religion that's trying to remove itself from paganism. So that was one of the impetus, and everything that the Egyptians loved about the cats, you know, really fertile, you know, lots of litters, nocturnal, you know, were all the things that the Christians felt, you know, this was an animal that hunted and was highly sexualized, let's say. And so they took that as meaning that perhaps this animal was could be an agent of the devil. And this wasn't the only animal who had this laid upon them. There were toads and other creatures that were looked upon as agents of evil.
Can you speak about an individual object that depicts cats as evil?
Yes, there are a couple in the exhibition. One is by the wonderful artist Bruegel, and it shows a cat and a toad looking at each other in this den of evil with witches flying and a sorcerer sitting looking at his book of magic and all these strange hybrid animals, you know, with different parts of different animals attached to them. And it's supposed to be this evil den. And in there is this cat and toad looking at each other. I did some research to try to find some kind of literary source for the cat and toad looking at each other, being so close. And I did find one written by a late medieval bishop of France that said that this incredible story, which almost sounds like Monty Python in the way it's written, or I should say the way it's been translated, it said, beware of the cat, it licketh the toad. And then with that, the poisoned tongue, it would contaminate the water source for good Christians who would be sick for as much as 6 months.
One of the things that we talked about earlier is that there was a period in European history when portraits of children would often be accompanied by their pets. Why was that? And what does that tell us about the period when these paintings were made?
Well, this is really interesting because, as I mentioned, the cat is not looked upon very well during the Middle Ages. But then all of a sudden, it starts getting into some portraits very slowly. By the time of the Enlightenment, so by the 18th century, you start seeing more and more children, especially, with their cat. It is likely coming from this break from tradition, so break from the Catholic Church and these concepts of evil. At the same time, a rise in this concept of kindness and child rearing, already by the work of John Locke, which is he was a British philosopher at the end of the 17th century. You already see him writing that to create a good citizen, a good adult citizen, it's important to rear a child in a way that they feel empathy and kindness towards others. And one of the ways that Locke suggests doing this is bringing a pet into the house. So when you see a portrait of a child, let's say of a 10-year-old, holding a book and then has a cat also on, you know, on their lap, it's a sign that this child is being well raised. She has a book, which means she's learned, her parents have taken the time to teach her how to read. But she's also a kind person who knows how to care for other creatures and people. And that combination of stimulating the intellect but also the heart of a child really comes to the fore in the 18th and 19th centuries, and we're still part of that tradition today. Many families feel it important to teach their children not only empathy but responsibility through the care of a pet.
Mm-hmm. And you worked with a lot of people outside of art history, with historians, psychologists, sociologists, in putting the show together. What did you learn from them? How did that change the way you did your job?
Well, what I just mentioned about childhood was inspired by talking to Janet Davis, who is a professor in the American Studies Department.
Here at UT.
Here at UT, yes. She is going to be publishing her book on the culture of kindness in the United States. And she was very helpful. I owe a lot to Sam Gosling, who is a professor in the psychology department at the University of Texas at Austin. And he is an anthrozoologist, which is he studies human and animal interactions. And this is a new discipline that's only about 2 or 3 decades old. And it really is, let's say, a symptom or a product of the culture's own interest and devotion to these companion animals, which has risen, you know, dramatically. We spend billions of dollars on caring for our pets.
Mm-hmm. There are more dogs than children in the United States.
And that says a lot.
Yeah.
You know, these psychologists look at the way we treat other species and think about them, and then as a way of understanding how we feel. I just read an article in the New York Times Magazine recently in which there is a 72-year-old psychiatrist whose whole therapy is based on your pet, and you bring your pet in and you project so much on that animal, your feelings of abandonment you may have felt as a child, or your desire to be loved a certain way or cared for, and you project so much on that animal that he's able to tap into some deep fears about you through that. So it's a very interesting field, I feel.
And these are all feelings that we see represented in very different ways through all the objects and paintings that you are displaying, right?
That's true, because an artist is a great observer of life, and you'll see something from, 1830 that is a perfect illustration for a new anthrozoological theory. And we do mention this in the labels of the exhibition. So we're constantly aware that so much of who and we are and what we do is a social construct. And we are very cognizant of that as you move through the exhibition, of where you are in history, and also how these artists from the past are in a way speaking to the anthrozoologists of the present.
That's a great way to put it.
Through their illustrations.
Well, another thing that you do that's not traditional is you include some non-traditional works of art in the show, such as cat videos.
That's right.
Where do they fit into the overall trajectory of the history of the depiction of animals? And what can they tell us about us, about our own period?
Well, I think what I mentioned earlier about this boom, in fact, one anthrozoologist calls it petophilia, this like total love and admiration for pets, especially cats and dogs. But also there's this incredible invention of the internet. And this is a way some people feel that cat owners can share their wonderful, beautiful pets with the world. Someone said it's sort of like a worldwide dog park for the cat people. But cats are incredibly lithe and beautiful animals. Hold on. Are you a cat person?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can tell. Okay. You know how I can tell? Because you most of your questions have revolved around cats. And they're actually more dog images in the show.
Well, that was actually my next question was, what's the relative weight of cats and dogs in the show?
There are, I would say there's about a third feline and two-thirds canine. Mm-hmm. And that's because dogs serve more utilitarian purposes, not just hunting, but they were depicted as loyal companions long before the cat. So really starting as early as the 13th and 14th century, you start seeing companion dogs. And you really have to wait till about the 18th century to start seeing that with cats. You also, there's a whole genre of hunting that evolved from the aristocratic pastime. In fact, you had to be an aristocrat to hunt in Europe throughout the Middle Ages and the Renaissance and into the Baroque. So these wonderful hunting pictures show these fabulous hounds on the scent or, you know, running down a wolf. I have an image of that in the show. So dogs appear in art much earlier and in many much more varied ways than cats do.
Mm-hmm.
In the literature section of the exhibition, I devoted that solely to the cat. And in the morality section of the exhibition, there's mostly cat imagery in that as well. I felt a way of balancing out this situation, which is a cultural situation, is to give the cat it sort of the last hurrah of the show, because I have three monitors outside of the show because I did feel like the moving image would be distracting in an exhibition with paintings and prints and drawings.
So outside the show, you have three video monitors,
and there are four very popular cat videos, which are mesmerizing. I find them mesmerizing. Two are from Japan, and I have to thank the Department of Japanese here at the University of Texas for helping me get the privileges to show them. But there's Maru, a very famous internet cat who's charming.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Zen cat who's featured in a 12-minute video of cats with things put on their heads. Also, I was interested in the quality of the video. Some are higher in resolution than others, but I thought they were visually compelling.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nora the piano cat was more about how the cat is adapting to a human activity like playing the piano. And we actually have an 18th century illustration in a book that shows a very famous Parisian harpist who had her cat who would guide her harp playing. So if the cat didn't like it, apparently it would express itself in a certain way and she would change the way she played the harp. And she was so thankful to this cat, this is a true story, that she gave her entire estate to it. And had very famous, you know, important lawyers write up the will. And there's a picture of her on her deathbed with the cat on her lap. And the lawyers, they're drawing up the will. So you'll have to come see that. It's quite amusing. But in the end, her human family won out.
Now, do people gravitate to particular paintings or objects?
Well, I think they start with the video. So they're already in good mood by the time that they get in.
Yeah, that's a nice way to...
Yeah. So, it's also the last thing you see. So you're usually in a pretty good mood. But and I'm hoping that our visitors will also start thinking about how they take care of their own animals, how their own psychology is influencing their relationship with other species. So that is, to me, important. There are some big paintings that attract people. There's a huge one of otter hounds on the scent from the 19th century, which is just incredible. It has these big, smelly, wet dogs, you know, really in the pursuit of hunting an otter in a stream in Great Britain. There's also a fabulous large painting by one of the great game painters of the 17th century, Jan Weenix, which attracts a lot of people, even though it's a bit gory because it's game picture. And that means that there's a lot of dead animals looking at you as you come towards it. I would say some of the Japanese prints are very popular that show cats on the prowl. And there's a beautiful drawing by Edward Hopper showing his neighbor's cat. Actually, it was John Dos Passos' cat, Perkins, young boy. And so there's the intimacy there of an artist who really does enjoy the company of a cat and is able to express that through this drawing.
Well, it sounds like a fantastic show, both for art lovers as well as people interested in the ways that paintings can tell us about history. So thank you very much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you so much for, as I said before, for your interest and for this interview. Thank you, Joan.
You can find a transcript of this episode, along with supplemental documents, suggestions for further reading, and correlations to this Texas and National Educational Standards for History and Geography on our website, blogs.utexas.edu/15-minute-history. That's the numerals 15-minute-history. You can also find a link to suggest topics for upcoming episodes. The University of Texas at Austin is a free speech campus. Opinions and viewpoints expressed in episodes of 15-Minute History do not represent the official position of the University of Texas or of any of its colleges or departments. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.